The outlines of my talk today will be, about asthma, how to control asthma and a new paradigm in asthma, basically, symptom control and the future risk. We will talk about the asthma management program and the steps approach according to the GINA guidelines, and at the end, we'll go over how to step down. Okay, this picture is, I guess some of you would know who GINA Loro Brigida. Okay. Asthma is a major healthcare issue. It's a chronic disease that affects 16 million adults in the United States and 7 million kids. It affects around 5 to 16% of the population worldwide. In Lebanon, with some studies done here, it's around 12% of the population. And asthma-related hospitalization didn't decrease during the last 10 years. And 75% of the cost in asthma is related to the medicine. The Global Initiative for Asthma, or GINA, states that it is reasonable to expect that most patients with asthma control of the disease can and should be achieved and maintained. So the whole goal is to control symptoms in asthma. And to control symptoms, one would look for controlling or minimizing day-to-day symptoms during daytime and nighttime. Patients should have no limitation in their activity, minimal rescue bronchodilator use, and avoid narrowing of the airway. And at the same token, patients should have minimal future risk. So patients who have a risk in the future should be also tackled as uncontrolled asthma. So we have to look at them in a different way, patients who are working in environments that are polluted, patients who have pets at home that they are allergic to their pets, and patients who are losing lung function over time should be also looked for and after like an uncontrolled patient. So the revised paradigm of asthma is not new. GINA in 2014, they didn't put it just new. This is already studied from before. Those are publications from 2005 already. And what they recommend is always assessing the asthma control, and the periodic assessment, we'll go over it, for adherence, the psychological status, the asthma triggers, the action plans, the comorbidities. For the asthma control, you all know the frequency of the symptoms. You ask your patient, activity limitation, the use of bronchodilators, rescue bronchodilators, and the patient feeling about their own disease, the pulmonary function test, and the exacerbation. I'm mentioning all this so you note it when you are in your clinic, in your office, as a healthcare provider, you should have this information, because you will target this information in the follow-up. The component of the asthma management program are mainly four. One, develop an excellent doctor-patient relationship. You should put a target with your patient, aim for having minimal symptoms. The second component in the management is to identify and reduce exposure for risk factor. It is as important as giving medicine. So look for tobacco smoking, drugs that may increase asthma like beta blockers, food additives, house dust mites, animal with fur, cockroaches, outdoor pollen, and mold, indoor mold. And then you go through a guideline. We're not saying that the guidelines are just one size fit all, but they are here to start. So you can start with the guidelines and then adjust. And then you monitor your patient, and then you will have to define if your patient is controlled, partially controlled, or uncontrolled. You just have to keep in mind that asthma severity and asthma control are not the same thing. Hospital admission, emergency room visit, correlate more closely with asthma control than with asthma severity. Severe persistent asthma can be well controlled by compliance and by avoidance. Mild asthma can be poorly controlled in a patient who lacks appropriate inhaler technique, has reflux, and doesn't avoid triggers. So there are two different things. Our target is to have controlled patient. the majority of our patients will be mild persistent asthma. Moderate and severe asthma is not the bulk of asthma. So this is why the target should be controlling symptoms and reducing future risk. And this is why the impairment domain and the risk domain may respond to different treatment. What do I mean by this? The risk domain, like reflux. Reflux smoking will not respond to asthma medicine, while symptoms will respond to asthma medicine. And keep in mind that patients who got two or more exacerbations during a year requiring oral corticosteroids, by definition, have persistent asthma. And we have tools. The tools are given to us, and some of us use those tools in our office to assess the asthma control in our patient. I would like you to pay attention to the first test, the ACT test, because it goes over the last 4 weeks, and it has five domains. The first four domains, daytime symptoms, nocturnal symptoms, activity restriction, and reliever use, you can ask directly the patient about them. Why? The self-perception is the patient's impression about his disease. So when talking to a patient, if he tells you, yes, I feel my asthma is well controlled, by asking him about his daytime symptoms, yes, I get shorted of breath here and there, I wake up once or twice a week, then this guy, he has poor perception of his symptoms. And you have to keep that in mind while you are giving him his treatment. On the other hand, in a study done in England back in 2008, looking around 10,000 patients roughly, and 60% of them were uncontrolled, and 40% of them perceived themselves as controlled. When you look at the second column on the left and on the right, you can see that you have 30% of the patients that were feeling that they were controlled, they were using two or three times medicine per week or having symptoms of asthma two or three times per week. So sometimes patients, they don't perceive themselves as being uncontrolled while they are really uncontrolled. And this is our task to get the symptoms from our patients, okay? And don't count on lung function. We knew from already a lot of studies in the past, and this is one of them, that lung function tests don't correlate with asthma symptoms. So, and you have the overestimator and the underestimator. The overestimator will be calling you every day for uncontrolled symptoms, and they may be having maybe just a runny nose, and the underestimator may be having an attack and they're not realizing it. So don't look at lung function to target your treatment. So we go to GINA and the goal in the asthma management. The long-term goal should be symptom control and risk reduction. Achieving these goals require a partnership between patient and their healthcare providers. Ask the patient about their own goals regarding their asthma. Good communication strategy are essential and write them down in your notes. Consider the healthcare system, the medication availability, cultural and personal preferences, and health literacy. So you have to explain to the patient, tell him about the medicine you're going to give him, see if he can afford the medicine, see if he have access to the healthcare system. And when we talk about management, you all know this, the Demling wheel, where you have to assess, act, and reassess, and you adjust. Here, assess is the diagnosis. Make sure you get the right diagnosis, make sure that the patient knows how to take his inhaler, and see what are the patient's preferences. Two, you give the medicine, you do the avoidance, and you treat modifiable risk factors, like reflux, for example. And you reassess symptoms, exacerbation, side effects from medicine, patient satisfaction, and lung function. So that should be a continuous management program over the year with your patient. So it's like a contract you get with the patient, and then it's a contract for continuous improvement. And you have to choose between controller options. We are not left with just one controller, okay? The good news is we have different options. And you have to individualize with the patient. So you should share the decision with your patient. Some patient would not like to take inhaler, they'd prefer a pill. Some mother would not like her son to have inhaled corticosteroids and they have corticophobia. So you have to talk about it. and you have to talk about the risk factor, you have to look at the preference, and then there are practical issues like inhaler technique, the adherence, and the cost. You make sure that you give a patient a treatment that he can afford. The initial controller treatment for adults, adolescents, and children, the age 16 to 11, are best started early. And the indication for low-dose inhaled corticosteroids are any of asthma symptom more than twice a month, waking up due to asthma more than once a month, and any asthma symptom plus any factor of exacerbation. What do I mean by any factor of exacerbation? I just seen a young 14-year-old girl who is allergic to cat, and she has occasional symptoms, but she doesn't want to get rid of her cat. So even she has minimal symptoms, she needs to be on a controller because the risk factor is around her all the time. You consider starting at a higher step if the patient has troublesome asthma symptoms on most day, waking up from asthma once or more per week, especially if any risk of exacerbation. And if initial asthma presentation is with an exacerbation, you give a short course of oral corticosteroids and start regular controller treatment like high-dose inhaled corticosteroids or medium-dose inhaled corticosteroids associated in a lab in the same device, and then you step down if the patient is controlled over 3 months. And those are the stepwise approach proposed by the Regina, and then we'll go over them. And this is a better look at them, step 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5. Just to remember, I'm not going to repeat it, between each step, you should provide guided self-management education, treat modifiable risk factors and comorbidity, advise about non-pharmacological therapy and strategy, quit smoking, consider stepping off if uncontrolled symptom, exacerbation, or risk, but check diagnosis, inhaler technique, and adherence first. Consider stepping down if symptom controlled for 3 months, plus low risk for exacerbation. Keep in mind that stopping inhaled corticosteroids is not advised by those guidelines. Okay, this step one. Step one is as-needed inhaler, short-acting beta-2 agonist. I'm not going to go long on this one. This option should be reserved for patients with infrequent symptoms of short duration and with no risk factor for exacerbations. You can consider adding regular low-dose inhaled corticosteroids for patient at risk of exacerbation. Step two, this is where the serious stuff starts. So you have the first option being low-dose inhaled corticosteroids and other controller option, leukotriene receptor antagonist or low-dose theophylline, and a reliever as needed short-acting beta-2 agonist or a SABA. So regular low-dose inhaled corticosteroids with as-needed SABA, this is the preferred option. It reduces the risk of exacerbation and asthma-related hospitalization and death. The other options, and then we'll look a little bit in detail at them, leukotriene receptor antagonist with as-needed SABA, combination low-dose inhaled corticosteroids with LABA with as-needed SABA, they reduce symptom and increase lung function compared to inhaled corticosteroids. It's more expensive and does not further reduce exacerbation. You can also use, in seasonal asthma, intermittent inhaled corticosteroids with as-needed SABA, especially if there is no interval symptom between the season. Usually you start in ICS immediately when symptoms commence, and you stop them 4 weeks after the end of the pollen season. Let's look at how ICF perform compared to other controller in the real world. You all remember this study by Price in the New England. And this is looking at how it compares to leukotriene receptor antagonist as a first line or add-on asthma controller therapy. Just to remind you, this is a 2-year pragmatic trial. This is a real world trial. No blind, no control. Patient initiated on controller comparing either ICS or leukotriene receptor antagonist. The objective was clinical improvement in quality of life. And who was enrolled? Asthma symptoms deemed by their physician to require initiation of asthma controller therapy. Outcome, peak flow, and asthma questionnaire, meaning AQLQ or SEQ, change in that score. You look at 24 weeks, they line up. no difference. Okay? Initiation of inhaled corticosteroids or leukotriene receptor antagonist in the first step, and or this was step two actually in the GINA, no difference. Looking at secondary outcome exacerbation, also no difference. So it's an option, it's up there on the guideline. The implication, why? Well, it works in the real world because it's easier to take a pill and adherence is superior. Okay? Sometimes if you use low potent inhaled corticosteroids, you may need 3-4 puffs as a low dose, sure. Okay, and it's easier to take a pill than take 2 or 3 or 4 puffs. Rhinitis symptoms also can be improved by leukotriene receptor antagonist. Let's move further to step 3. 1 or 2 controller in step 3 and as needed inhaler reliever. In adult adolescent, the preferred option are either a combination of low-dose ICS LABA maintenance with as-needed SABA, or a combination of low-dose ICS-containing drug with formoterol in one device, maintenance and reliever regimen. So those are what the recommendation for that step, the step 3. Adding LABA reduces symptoms and exacerbation and increases FEV1, while allowing lower dose of inhaled corticosteroids, and we'll see this in the studies. In at-risk patient, at-risk being in an environment and workplace where they are at risk, maintenance and reliever regimen significantly reduce exacerbation with similar level of symptom control and lower ICS dose compared with other regimens. In children 6 to 11 years old, preferred option is medium dose inhaled corticosteroids with as-needed SABA. So the LABA are not the first option in 6 to 11-year-old. Adult and adolescent, as far as other option in adult and adolescent, you can increase the ICS dose or add the leukotriene receptor antagonist or theophylline, which is less effective than the combination of an ICS and LABA. You can still add LABA in the age group of 6 to 11. This is FDA, and this is Drazen from New England regarding LABA. Combining ICS with long-acting beta agonist can be implemented as maintenance therapy to help control more severe asthma. LABA should be added to a treatment regimen for patients over the age of 5 years. So the limit is 5 years for a LABA. LABA should be added only when asthma is not adequately controlled on low dose of ICS alone. Step 3. LABA should not be used as monotherapy in the treatment of asthma, and you know this well. And the FDA, any asthma expert, have questioned the safety of LABA therapy and suggested strategy to minimize the use of these drugs, and there is ongoing trial now looking at this. In step 3, adding LABA is more effective than increasing ICS. This is a nice meta-analysis looking at 48 trial by Ducharme from Quebec, Montreal. Inadequately controlled ICS patient having a dose between equivalent of 400 to 1,000 microgram of buclometazone. You get fewer exacerbation when you add LABA, and you need to treat 73 patients to get one exacerbation less. You get modestly greater improvement in lung function, fewer symptoms, and less SABA use than higher inhaled corticosteroids dose. You get fewer withdrawal from trials due to poor asthma control. So this is why it comes in the recommendation, adding LABA to ICS, low dose. And the study, what's about using ICS LABA and as needed ICS LABA. Okay, so low dose ICS LABA and as needed ICS LABA. This is the trial by Demoli, the budesonide for motor maintenance and reliever therapy versus conventional best practice at that time. Okay, we're talking 2009 and before. This is a compilation of trial that grouped around 8,000 patients, basically 7,800 randomized, to low dose, SMART, 160 over 4.5, plus as needed, twice a day, surely, or conventional best practice with a SABA. And looking at 26 week, well, you get less exacerbation numerically, the red line compared to the green line. However, this difference was not significant. We look at other outcome, asthma questionnaire score. You get more patient in the well-controlled group, and this is significantly different, and definitely you get less patient uncontrolled. other outcome measurement, the corticosteroid load. You get less dose of inhaled corticosteroids per day, and you get less oral corticosteroids, obviously, because you get less exacerbation. Okay, what's about other add-on non-ICS controller, like leukotriene receptor antagonist or theophylline? We go back to that ELEVATE trial by David Price and the two-year pragmatic trial, now looking at a different group of patients, patient initiated on a LAB compared to leukotriene antagonist as add-on therapy for uncontrolled asthma. Okay, don't forget that some of those patients, the add-on LABA may not be in the same device as the inhaled corticosteroid. The objective, clinical improvement in quality of life. In the add-on therapy trial, eligible patient had received already inhaled glucocorticosteroids for at least 12 weeks. And the outcomes were the measurement of the asthma, of the peak flow and the asthma questionnaire. And also they line up, no difference. Looking at secondary outcome, well, same number of exacerbation, no significant difference. What's interesting, you get more compliance with the leukotriene group compared to the ICS plus LABA. But don't forget, here you got the patient with two devices to use morning and evening compared to use the pill. And again, don't forget that some of those patients had allergic rhinitis and they didn't benefit. What's about theophylline? Cheap drug, bronchodilator when given in a low dose. Sustained release theophylline has little effect as a first-line controller, so it's not really a controller. May provide benefit, although less than that provided by long-acting inhaled beta-2 agonist as add-on therapy. Looking at old trial, 1997, this is comparing medium to medium-high dose inhaled corticosteroids to theophylline and the use of beta-2 agonist over in 12 weeks. So you get a significant reduction in use of beta-2 agonist, either if you increase the dose of inhaled corticosteroids or if you add on theophylline. This is during daytime. Looking at nighttime, you get less use of beta-2 agonist during the nighttime with the patient using theophylline than doubling the dose of inhaled corticosteroids. So it may help a little bit in at-night patients receiving just inhaled corticosteroids. But we have now tons of other options. But it's a cheap drug that is available. Let's go move further. Step 4, two or more controllers are needed now, and as needed inhaler reliever. Always they start. This is Gina. This is not my slide. My slides have Otelje on them. Those are Gina's slides, the one with the logo of Gina. Two or more controller plus as needed inhaler reliever. Check inhaler technique and adherence, and you will be surprised. Always check inhaler technique and adherence, you will always be surprised. This is how I know, the study is not out yet, that once per day inhaled corticosteroids and LABA work. Okay, people sometimes use it once per day, but it's not written in any guideline. Adults or adolescent, preferred option is combination low-dose inhaled corticosteroids for formoterol as maintenance and reliever regimen, or combination medium-dose ICS-LABA and as-needed SABA. So when you use medium-dose ICS-LABA, the PRN is a short-acting beta agonist. In children 6 to 11, Gina say, well, sent to an expert. Other options, adult or adolescents, try high-dose combination ICS-LABA. Also, study showed no real improvement, no real benefit, and increased risk of side effect. Increase dosing frequency, but this is for the budesonide-containing inhaler, so can you? This is the smart thing. Add on leukotriene antagonist or low-dose theophylline. Step 5. In step 5, the preferred option is to refer for a specialist, and you are all here specialists, and this is why we have add-on omalizumab, which is an anti-IgE that is suggested for a patient with moderate or severe allergic asthma that is uncontrolled on step 4 treatment. Other add-on treatment options at step 5 include sputum-guided treatment, I will mention this a little bit later, add-on low-dose oral corticosteroid, less than 7.5 milligram per day equivalent, and we can go over severe asthma, which will be a different talk. I don't want to get into that, but I would like you to know that you have options like tiotropium, like thermoplasty, like using antimycoplasma treatment, et cetera, et cetera. And this is why not all asthma are equivalent. And now what we can do is look at patient phenotype through biomarker. We use IgE for Xolaire, for omalizumab. We use sputum eosinophil for other drugs that we don't have right now on the market. Serum periostin for the anti-IL-13 that will be soon on the market. Low PC20, you can do bronchial thermoplasty, pheno, etc. So phenotyping patient is the way to look in the future. How often should asthma be reviewed? 1 to 3 months after treatment started, then every 3 to 12 months. During pregnancy, more often, every 4 to 6 weeks. After an exacerbation, try to see the patient early, 1 to 2 weeks. Stepping up, at least give it the time, 2 to 3 months before deciding on stepping up. And look for causes of exacerbation. So it's not every time that the patient comes, he's not controlled. He may have pneumonia, sinusitis, taking a drug that is exacerbating. So do the homework before going up in steps. And you can do sometimes short-term step-up for 1 to 2 weeks when you get the, when the patient gets a viral infection or exposure to an allergen. And this may be initiated in a written plan with the patient. Patient can do the low-dose ICS with formoterol maintenance and release regimen if they are able to understand, if they are not understated of their symptoms. Remember, when you do the asthma questionnaire, ask the patient about how do they feel about their disease. If your impression is that the patient is not controlled and he says he's doing well, then you cannot use the SMART approach. It's not for everyone. And then the good news is we can do step down. Consider stepping down after good control maintenance for 3 months. Find each patient minimum effective dose that control both symptoms and exacerbation. And going out of GINA, the suggestion we can get looking at the literature, this is from the American Lung Association Asthma Clinical Research Center. This is a bunch of patients that were on combination therapy trying to wean them down. They went in a run-in trial, followed up for 16 weeks, and one group received Montelukast 10 milligram or 5 for the kids, fluticasone 100 twice daily, or low-dose combination therapy with fluticasone and salmeterol. And you can see that the patients who were on the combination, when they stepped down, they got the least problem or least exacerbation. Another trial, the Godard trial, this is maintaining asthma control in persistent asthma controlled with 250 salmeterol fluticasone discus. Comparing three strategies in 6 months, double-blind randomized study. So this is double-blind randomized, and the strategy were the following. Going to just fixotide or going to low-dose salmeterol and fixotide. And at the short-term and the long-term, so at 12-week and the 24-week, the patient were on the combination were doing better as stepping down than going just on the inhaled corticosteroids. Having said that, this is the recent meta-analysis from the Cochrane looking at different trial on stepping down, and then this is comparing stopping LABA versus continued LABA with ICS on the outcome. So basically keeping the patient just on inhaled corticosteroids on a, or on a low-dose combination. And this meta-analysis for the exacerbation part requiring corticosteroids favored keeping the combination. Favored, although was not significant. It crossed the line. And in this line, and in this slide, this is looking at asthma control, ACQ test. Keeping the patient on a combination was significantly better than just stepping down to inhaled corticosteroids. So the recommendation is step down to a low-dose ICS-LABA combination. Okay? I'm going to stop here and conclude. Asthma is a chronic inflammatory disease. Patient-doctor implication assessing asthma control and future risk are the cornerstone of the management. So the excellent relation between you and your patient will give you the best outcome. Difficult to control asthma is different from severe asthma. Keep that in mind. You can have mild asthma and be difficult to control. Combining using SMART is a GINA recommendation is step 3 and 4. Stepping down, favor combination low-dose ICS-LABA, and guidelines can be adopted eventually according to patient phenotype in the future. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. George Dabar, for your excellent presentation. Any question?
We have, I guess, 5 minutes for questions, and then... I guess it's clear.
Okay. Thank you for this excellent talk.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you about DAXAs in asthma. There was some recent reports, and I have started actually using it in resistant patients.
You know, as far as we know for the mechanism of DAXAs in COPD, it's not far from theophylline. DAXAs doesn't show on any of the guidelines, however. And we are here to talk about simple management. So, not going to get into that. Tiotropium in the step 5, it is in some of the guidelines. Not in Agena. Not in Agena. Other guidelines, NSAP, the American guidelines.
Thank you, George. Excellent presentation. How often in your everyday practice do you get to... reduce a patient from being on a combination therapy to maybe a step 1, just being on a short acting? Does it happen often? Do you see it really? By controlling maybe all the triggers, does it happen?
You can see this mainly in adolescent. You know, some kids that are 11, 12, and they take a good treatment for a year or two, they do avoidance, and then when they have been asymptomatic for a year, after going down to inhale corticosteroids for a year and they are asymptomatic, what do you do? You have to stop it at one point. And then you stop. Dr. Khoury.
Thank you, George. Despite the recommendation of Gina, could we not use oral steroids in exacerbations in some indications?
Gina are just a suggestion. You know, you can use any guideline you want, but when you try to cross the different guidelines, they all mention that oral corticosteroids should be given for an acute exacerbation. So then you ask me, how do you define the exacerbation? Is it a phone call exacerbation? Is it an emergency room visit exacerbation? So, but an exacerbation, by definition, should be treated with oral corticosteroids.
Because it's so difficult to impose steroids, oral steroids or systemic steroids to Lebanese patient. And this indication could seem a bit excessive in some exacerbation.
I can extrapolate to kids. There are studies out there looking at exacerbation in kids and pulmicort in the emergency room. No effect. Only? I would prefer... I mean, it is up there. As a step 2, you can give Montelukast alone for a patient where the parents have corticophobia, and he can get controlled. He can be controlled just with Montelukast. It's up there. The study show it. I mean, also, inhaled corticosteroids will be better.
Thank you, George, for your presentation. Back to the exacerbations. When using the SMART approach, when do you tell your patients after how many extra Symbicort doses that probably this is an exacerbation and you have to call me to see if you have to give oral steroids?
To tell you the truth, if you on their leaflet, I guess you can go up to 10 or 12 doses per day. But personally, I tell my patient, when you are for a couple of days on more than 8 inhalation per day, I want you to call, okay? So, and often and this is true, when patient didn't turn around in a couple of days, they would not turn around in 1 week, and you need to give sometimes oral corticosteroids. The recommendation with the SMART is more from the pharmacologic point of view, pointing out to the safety of the different molecules that are in the drug. But again, there is this issue of patient appreciating their symptoms. It's tricky, you know, it's tricky. You have really to rely on your patient 100%, you know, it's over the phone, you explain to them, to him, you wrote it down that you can increase to up to 8, 10, but you really, it's not, it's few patients that you can rely on them 100% with this.